Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Glenn Thurston has established Mental Hunts that aims to help people understand the importance of looking after mental health in the hunting community. It's a sensitive subject, one I'm all too familiar with. So let's talk mental health, guns, and helping each other. Glenn is with me now. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Now, I was talking last week with Hugh Devereaux Mack from Colfo, and one area that we didn't really touch on a lot while we were talking about changes to firearms laws and all the unnecessary burden that is being placed on firearms owners by police and legislation was the mental health aspect. Hugh suggested you're probably the best person to talk about this. I've got a few things that I can share as well about how I've had interactions with the police around mental health. And then we can let people know that it's annoying, but there's a pathway through.
There is, yeah. I guess you said I'm an expert, and I'm an expert through being
an expert in real life is what. I mean, I've read your story. You've had a terrible experience, and you decided to do something about it. So why don't we start there, right? Let's explore a little bit about your history and where you've ended up with having mental hunts and what drove you to that.
Rightio. I guess. If we go way, way back when I was about 18, and this is real quick, shortened version of everything, but when I was 18, I had a really drunken episode. I drank heavily as a young fella and ended up in hospital after an attempt on my life. Life moved forward, and this is, like I say, a very shortened version. I got on with it. A few years later, met my now wife, who we've been married 20 years, had some great times. But through that time, I never really got the help I needed. Back when I was 18, I'm 45 now. So back when I was 18, it was never talked about. Move on, get on with life, whatever.
Harden up.
Yeah. And then so I just lived with those demons my whole life, not knowing really what to do because it wasn't spoken about. So, and then move fast forward now to 2016. I had a business here in Wanaka and life was getting stressful. I was drinking heavily. I'd always been drinking, but I just was drinking more than normal. Alcohol became quite a big burden on my life. Every time I drank, these demons would come, the stress of work, everything. And I had this one night and, life nearly got the better of me again. And that was it. I said to my wife, I've got to do something about this. I can't do this anymore. I can't live with this shit. I can't live with what's going through my head. So I went to the GP and sought the help that I needed finally. It was the hardest decision I'd ever had to make in my life. I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew something wasn't right. So I went to the doctor. Things were awesome. She was amazing. My GP referred me to brief intervention, and the lady I dealt with in there was really good. Talked about medication, which I'd been anti my whole life because, you know, taking drugs and drinking alcohol, I know everything about the medical profession. So, No. But in the end, I said, look, just give me whatever. I've got to stop these bad thoughts. Nearly ended my life twice, and I don't want to die. I just don't want these thoughts. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want stresses to get hold of me. Anyway, went through that whole process. I can't remember how many sessions I had with her. It was way more than the government was allowing per person. And I got on with my life. I got some great tools. Things were awesome. At that time, I got on medication. I also gave up alcohol. So I'm now nearly, 7.5 years sober. And about 4 years on, 2019, 3 years on, I decided I wanted to go back to the doctor and have a chat to the GP because I just had this feeling that giving up alcohol was all I needed to do. I didn't need to get on the medication because it all happened at once. I was like, what actually is helping me? Because things were good. Is it the medication? Is it the tools I've been given? Or is it the fact that I'm not drinking? So I went back to the GP and had a chat with her and we worked through a process. She goes, the only way we're going to find out is if we go off these things. So we went off them over a period of about 3 months. I weaned off them, did everything correctly.
Hey, so it's hard work, isn't it, coming off those things?
It is. Yeah. Well, it was actually quite easy and things were great until about 3 months in when I'd sort of got off them. And and then the demons started again. And it was like I was working on a farm at the time, and I actually personally love working on that farm and the whole time I was there. And all of a sudden I didn't enjoy work. I didn't want to get out of bed and everything was just distorted again. And I could see it. I saw it coming and I was like, nah, this is not good. I tried to fight it for a little bit, but nah. I said to my wife, look, I got to go back and find out more about this medication and just get back on it. So if I'm going to be on it, I want to know what I'm doing. So I went back to the doctor, pretty coherent and everything's sweet. You know, I was having a bit of a shit hiccup in life. Went back and said, told her what was going on. And she said, look, we'll put you back on the medication. At least now we know. But how about I refer you to mental health services just to get you through this hiccup, you know? I said, sweet, no, that'd be awesome, because obviously the previous time I had an amazing experience. Anyway, a few days later, I had this appointment with the nurse of mental health services, and, well, within the first 10 minutes, he was asking a few questions, and he says, are you suicidal? I said, well, yes, I've been suicidal pretty much my whole life. It's just demons I've been fighting forever. It's just there. And then he says, do you have a firearms license? Almost in the same sentence. And I'm like, what? I said, nah. And I sort of all of a sudden just clicked. And I was like, what are you, what? No, this is not what I'm here for. This is not what it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter about my firearms. He's like, well, I'm legally obliged to ask this by law, rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, what? And then it all sort of clicked with 2009, the March massacre and all that sort of thing. And I was like, oh no. I said, nah, I'm not doing this. This is not what I came in here for. This is purely just a get me back on track meeting. And I actually ended up walking out of the meeting and I said to him, I'm going down to the police station now. There's no way, no one's taking my guns. I need my guns for work. I enjoy taking my kids hunting. No way. Anyway, he packed up as well and he followed me. He came down to the police station with me. It was a bit of a random scenario. And next minute we're in talking with the constable there, and sure enough, they said, yep, we have to act on this and we need to take your firearms based on what he's told us. And I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
It pushed you over the edge into another depressive episode. Thanks very much.
100%. It put me in the worst position. The worst part was, like, I said to him, look, it's school holidays. My kids are home. Can we do it tomorrow? They're back to school. No, we've got to act now. I said, but I'm not a threat. I said, I've got things to do in town. And then I'll head back out later. They said, oh, well, let us know when you're heading home. Anyway, they waited on the side of the road for me before I had, as I pulled out, they followed me back home and they were right behind me when I got home in front of my family, in front of my kids. Went in and obviously took all my firearms right down to counted every single bullet that I had in my 22 big Tupperware container. All my rifles, all my cartridges. It was just like, what the hell just happened? I just went in to see my doctor and get back on my meds, and now I'm getting treated like I've just robbed the local dairy. Like, holy crap. It was horrible. And seriously, when they walked away and I had to somehow explain some shit to my kids and just go, what was going on, made up some bullshit story. Because I hadn't at that time spoken to the girls about it. I've got three daughters. Hadn't really spoken to them about what was going on with me. You know, they were just a bit younger at that time. And then they left and I'm just sitting there going, I'm a criminal. I'm sitting here. I felt like shit.
They've treated you like a criminal. When in actual fact, you're a law-abiding firearms owner who put his hand up and said, I need some help.
Yeah, and like I've just wrote recently in a post, that makes me fit and proper, does it not? I'm looking after my well-being. I don't know where this becomes an issue, all because of all these crazy idiots that go and do this stupid shit. They go to court and then they scream mental illness, you know, whether they've got one or not. So all of a sudden, anyone with a mental illness is treated like these idiots.
You're like me. You see Golriz Garaman on the TV going, oh, I did it. I stole things because I was mentally ill. And you're sitting there thinking, well, I haven't stolen anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I am mentally ill.
I mean, you know, I've fought depression all my life as well. And, you know, people in my family don't really understand it. I've never actually had any suicidal thoughts, but depression affects people in different ways, in particularly blokes. Like, most women who suffer depression have the flight mechanism, right? When I first got diagnosed was actually after an episode where I got incredibly violent and beat some kid up who had lit off a firework that had exploded near my son. And that's when I realized I needed help. I went to the doctor, wonderful doctor in Howick that I went and saw. And he said, mate, you've got depression. I said, well, I don't feel sad. I just feel angry. And he said to me, well, you need to understand that you've got this little lizard brain in the middle of your brain, and that controls everything when you are in a heightened state of awareness. And most blokes have fight rather than flight. They want to kill everything that's moving around them. You know, everything's a threat, and so you're really tense, and you've got all your blood's flowing to your extremities so you can run or fight or do whatever to survive. It's a natural instinct. It wasn't until I actually saw a psychologist who said, well, I was put on tablets, and well, I never liked them. I still don't like them. It was a psychologist who said to me, well, this is how your brain works. It's in this little amygdala part that's in your brain. It's on or off, yes or no, fight or flight, and in some cases can be freeze. So some people, when they're in a stressful situation, they just freeze. They can't move. It's what, like a rabbit does, right? You're a hunter, so you know you can be walking through an attic. You think there's nothing here, and all of a sudden this rabbit jumps out from under your feet and takes off. That's how depression works. It wasn't until I came to renew my firearms license that I encountered the same problems that you had. And I had this arms officer who decided to make life very difficult for me and said, right, and I was honest on the forms. Yep. Do you suffer depression? Yes. Do you take medication? Yes. Well, that was, you know, 3 months of hell unleashed right there just by ticking those boxes. You're being honest. And then he says to me, oh, you need to go and see a forensic psychologist to give an approval to have a firearms license. I couldn't get to see one for 3 months, and it cost $1,200.
Meanwhile, now, there's someone that really is in a dire straits situation, is on a waiting list to get in, that probably needs the help, whereas you're just trying to
– yeah,
you're wasting the system's resources.
Exactly. So I went to this clinical psychologist, and he said, well, why do you need firearms? It's not I need them. I want them. I get pleasure out of them. I collect them. I've got a collection of this and that, and I also hunt. He said, well, how do you feel when you're hunting? I said, I feel fantastic. Out in the bush, you know, or with my kids, experiencing nature, being real. Mm. It's not the bullshit world that I live in politics.
You know? Yeah, exactly. You get to shut out from...
Yeah, your phone doesn't work. It doesn't ring. No one can bother you. And you're reliant on your wits and everything else. And he signed it off and said taking away his guns would send him into a severe depressive episode. Don't do that. And so that's how I got around. But it cost me $1,200. Now, a lot of people don't have that money to do that. Or know that that's what you can go and do and get a psychologist to sign it off. But it does cost you.
Yeah, there is a process. But the thing is, back when I did it, it was back in 2009, and this was pre-Firearm Safety Authority. So there's a big difference now, and still yet to hear any bad stories yet, but what was happening?
I've heard some bad stories. I mean, I'm a member of Antique Arms.
Yeah.
But, you know, our guys collect machine guns and submachine guns and mortars and things like that, right? Big stuff. We've got guys in our club that have come to the executive or the president and said, look, I don't know how to answer this. You know, I've ticked this box and now I've been referred back to my GP. What do I have to get the GP to say? Mm. You know, and they're actually frightened, and they've been put into this state of frightenedness by the new Firearm Safety Authority, which seems to only work to protect criminals, but that's another matter.
Yeah. I guess the biggest problem is there's a lot of inconsistency. And it also, I know the Firearm Safety Authority have the end decision, but here's this person, like even if it happened to me now, here's any person goes to the doctor for help, and then they've got a massive war against paperwork and authorities just for something simple like going hunting with your kids. And it just...
It will help their mental health.
Yeah. And regardless, say that all of a sudden we flicked a button and it was all fixed tomorrow and nothing was going to, you know, they'd sorted out a problem and it was... There's still going to be this barrier that's going to take years to fix. But at the moment, there's 230,000 license holders that are potentially scared to go get help. So give it 5, 10 years when all this mental health issues that they've probably just little depressive disorders, nothing major, turn into a major depressive situation, we're going to have a massive mental health crisis, and it's going to have nothing to do with them having a gun. It's the fact that they haven't gone and got help. It was a rare situation for me because it was really early in the piece, and then I actually got asked, I had to have an interview with the inspector in Queenstown and talk to him. I had 15 minutes with this guy. I won't talk names. Anyway, he said, I'll get back to you. Within 2 weeks, he got back to me and said, I've made the decision, and I'm and this is with all the assessments from the psychologist, with the GP saying you're fit and proper. He decided and overruled all that and said, no, I'm not going to let you have it. I basically found out a bit later down the track that he'd had a situation where someone did take their life and he hadn't taken a gun. So it was becoming a bit of a personal thing for him. So all these situations with GPs, whether they're anti-guns, whether the police have had a situation, it's coming down to one person's opinion, which is wrong. It shouldn't be based on people's opinion. It needs to be.
Should be the assessment of experts. If a psychologist and a GP says you're fit and proper to hold a firearms license, it shouldn't be up to Inspector, you know, Dobby to come up, who's got a personal axe to grind, to make a decision that says no.
Yeah, and fortunately that's gone now, because that was based around, I've heard people from different police departments having different situations. There was absolutely no consistency. Every story had a different twist to it, and it was really bad. And the reason I started up doing all this and advocating and trying to find some answers is because it was getting out of hand, and it was going to become a real major issue in the firearms community if we didn't deal to it. So I started making phone calls, and it wasn't until I actually got hold of Kendra Hill and the Firearms Safety Authority, and we started breaking it down, and they've started creating changes. And you know, they're held to what the government decide. Like, they're just the regulators. They don't actually make the rules. They've just got to enforce it. And yes, they're part of the police at the moment, but Nicole McKee, I was talking with her, and they're working on trying to break that away. It's a bit like the road, you know, the traffic stuff. You know, we've got the police that regulate it, the road transport that regulate it, but then you've got the police that enforce it. It's going to be a similar sort of situation, hopefully, if that goes through, which I think is a good thing, to get away from the police running it and ruling it and managing it. And I mean, they've got enough things to do. They just need to do their enforcing job and leave the regulating up to regulators. But the regulation needs to be more consistent. So mental health is, as you know, it's got a million branches. We say one word, mental health, but it actually, you know, what are we actually talking about? What category are you putting us under? There's so many different levels of it. Hey, look, if someone's really not well and they're in a really suicidal and they're making really bad decisions and they're talking really bad things, yeah, take their guns. I'm all for it. And there needs to be some sort of rules. But the average Joe like myself that just went in to get back on his medication, what a load of crap. I do want to emphasize.
If you look at what the police said, you know, they say, you know, they're concerned about suicide. If you're going to kill yourself, you don't. There's plenty of people who kill themselves every year without firearms.
100%.
A lot of them are vehicles, you know, single driver vehicle. do they take cars off people because they've got mental health issues? No.
You do a quick search online and you start finding all the data around all this.
There is no data.
There's 60% of suicides are by hangings. 10% are firearms and explosives. So why can we all at the age of 3 right through to whatever, end of your life, you can go into the hardware store and buy yourself a piece of rope, no hassles at all. Why are we not legislating rope? You know, that's actually what's killing more people by suicide than at firearms.
Well, that's right. I mean, you look up the numbers, even just deaths by firearm. You know, let's say the police are saying it's not just suicide. We're worried that people are going to go out and kill other people because they're depressed. Well, okay, well, in 2022, there was 11 deaths, manslaughter or murder from firearms. And in the year before that, in 2021, it was 10. So we're not talking huge numbers here. When you've got a road death toll that's measured in hundreds, and you've got the police focusing in minute detail on 230,000 firearms owners, and you know, in case 10 of them go out and kill somebody or themselves, you've got to question your priorities here.
Yeah,
really. And
ever since they brought in that lock cabinet legislation, I can't even remember when it was. Back in, was it 96 or something? Anyway, ever since then, that has actually slowed down the suicide rate, because it's just made it a bit harder for everyone to go and get their rifle if they're in a bad state. And, you know, most people are in the middle of the night, they're drunk, they're on drugs or whatever they are, and then they make a stupid decision and shit happens. If it's a little bit harder for them to get in their cabinet to get their rifle, it's going to be harder. So ever since that legislation, the suicide by firearms has actually decreased. And if you look at the data, and I've looked at the theses not long ago, it's actually still decreasing, very minimal, but it's decreasing. It's going in a good direction. And yet we've thrown in this massive panic attack purely because the government was not doing their job, and they've turned it into it's the firearms owner's fault. So now we've got this legislation that's been brought in, which is completely unnecessary. Everything was ticking along nice. You know, people were getting the help they needed. And now we've got 230,000 license holders that aren't going to get help because the word's out, you know. There were people, like I say, I started this because people were starting to talk bad on social media, and I thought, well, you doing that is actually creating the problem. So it's taken me about 5 years to pick through how I can – I was a bit nervous about actually making noise about it, because I was nervous I was going to actually add to the stigma of it, you know. But I've been very fortunate in the way that the media have picked it up, and it's become a positive thing for firearms holders, and people are realizing, shit, this is actually not just firearms and guns kill. This is actually creating a mental health issue for the country if not dealt with properly. Yes, there's got to be rules. Yes, people need to have their firearms taken off them if they're not well. But you know, farmers, you know, you go and get done drink driving two or three times, you can still get your license back for work. And yet if you're a farmer and you have your gun taken off you, that's it. You can't even do your job. So why can't we have...
You can't go out and put a horse with a broken leg down, because you're the only guy on the farm who had the firearms license. And guess what? The police took it last week. So now you've got a horse that's in pain.
I was farming at High Country Farm at the time when this happened to me. And it was a massive burden for me. We had a small block in town, and I managed some deer in there. And I'd have to ring my boss up and say, hey, I've got to euthanize this bloody deer that's got yonies. We need to get rid of it. I can't do anything about it because I wasn't allowed to carry a gun. I wasn't allowed near a gun. He'd have to come in and shoot it. And it was such a burden. It was like a half an hour drive in from the farm at town. It really started affecting me at work. I said to the police officer, I said, you try euthanizing a cow with a hammer. It doesn't work, eh?
Yeah. Can't really do it with a 22 either, unless you know what you're doing. I mean, cow skulls are bloody hard.
Yeah. You know? But having a license revoked, I technically had to leave the farm. So Willie could come in and shoot that deer. I can't be around a firearm. I can't even be next to someone with a firearm when you have your license revoked. This is what I mean. I was way more of a criminal, all because I went and got help. This is the revocation.
And then also you're stigmatized now in the system.
Yeah.
If you go to apply to get your firearms license now, one of the questions is, have you ever had your firearms license revoked?
Hmm. And yeah. I have to be transparent and say,
and then they go, oh no, that'll be no for you then. It's automatic stop. That's it, right?
And another point to make about all this is, it was about 2 months earlier, I had just renewed my license for another 10 years. I'd just gone through the vetting process. I'd gone through everything and got my license in the mail, paid all my money.
Yep.
And then they just took it. Didn't get reimbursed, didn't get nothing. It's like, well, why didn't I get through that? And yet I'd been through all that other stuff.
And you went through that, right?
Yeah.
And filled out all the paperwork. You would have been honest in there as well, and they already knew all of this stuff when you applied and renewed, right?
There was a question he asked. He goes, there's one thing here that's red flagging you. 9 years ago, so I'd already had my license for 1 year at that time. Nine years ago, I had a drunken episode at a bar and got in a fight. I ended up at the police station trying to get it sorted, and apparently the police wrote that I was in a very mentally unstable state. Yeah, I was as pissed as shit, and I'd just been beaten up.
Yeah.
I was angry and I was trying to get to the bottom of what had just happened.
Mm.
So they brought that up and I was just like, well, firstly, I've given up booze. I don't drink anymore. So there's the biggest problem gone. And he's like, okay. I said, okay, well, that's a problem. That was 9 years ago. Why did the cop never come and knock on my door and ask how I'm going? No one ever checked in on me. If he really gives a shit and it's a red flag and he's worried about me, why is he bringing it up 9 years later? You know, it's like.
But isn't this the problem with the interactions with the police being the, you know, they make the rules, they enforce the rules, and they prosecute you as well.
Yeah.
And handle the investigation. They're doing absolutely everything. They're actually the judge, the jury, and the executioner in all of these things.
There doesn't seem
to be any sort of sanity check, you know, excuse the pun, but
there seems to be
a sanity check here. And it's no different with the way they've set up the Firearms Safety Authority, right? They've actually set that up as a business unit inside the police, which is not what the review said. The review said that it needed to be external to the police. Well, that's happening now because of the election. But you have this situation where the police are in control of absolutely everything. If you're a firearms owner, can come around, knock on your door, take your guns, do all these sorts of things. And there's almost no recourse for anything.
No.
It's very hard to deal with an intransigent bunch of people that have decided that everyone who has a firearms license is a potential criminal, and therefore every interaction that they have with those people, us, is that you feel like you're being treated as a criminal. Every aspect, from the moment they knock on the door to the moment they ring you or whatever, you feel like whatever you say is going to be used against you. So then you have to sit, then you say nothing. And from a mental health aspect, that's an appalling situation to be in. There are no checks.
Yeah, and to the average person, it probably seems harmless enough, but like I keep saying, let's give it 5-10 years, and you think the mental health crisis is bad now. You think the suicide rate in the farming community is bad now. If they don't get treated because they need a bit of help, here we are in one sentence saying, go get help, go get help, go get help.
Mm.
But we're going to take the one tool you need for your job away from you, and the one thing that brings you joy with your family and your kids, no one's going to get help. And then all of a sudden we've got this massive crisis, which I just, like, yeah, I said.
It's even worse than that, though, you know, because some of the medications that you prescribe to deal with depression, if you bother to look at the contraindications in them, the side effects in them, right? There's one medication, mirtazapine. It's regularly prescribed to people for depression. Right? A little pink tablet that you take each night, and you can't get more than a month's supply from the. You know, normally your doctor or your GP will give you a 3-month prescription, and you renew them every 3 months. Not with mirtazapine. It's 30 days. You know why it's 30 days? Because then you don't have enough to kill yourself. Right? Because that is the major side effect of that depression medication, is that people want to kill themselves. Isn't that, like, screwed up?
Yeah.
They want to take your guns off you.
I've been anti-medication my whole life, especially when it comes to antidepressants, and that's through a situation that happened to my father. But, you know, I finally have succumbed to medication. And, yes, I take one tablet of fluoxetine every single day, and I'll take it for the rest of my life. It works for me, and not every one tablet's going to work the same for every single person. So some people have to go through a bit of a journey if they want to go on medication to find the right ones. But I was very lucky that the very first tablet I took, it didn't change me. It just took that demon thoughts. I could manage my way through shit days.
Even cut the day, doesn't it? It takes away the peaks, it takes away the troughs, and it's even day.
And I guess it's a good time for me to talk on medication and the myths around medication. Everyone seems to think that if you disclose that you've had medication, you've been on medication, or you're on medication, that you will not be able to have your firearms. That's wrong. You can. I am flat out on medication, and I 100% have my firearms license. So that is a myth. You do have to disclose it. You have to be honest. As soon as you start bullshitting in these things, it's going to go against you.
Don't lie. It really hurts if you lie, but it hurts if you tell the truth too. But just be aware of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. It really is. And this is, And I don't personally know what the answer is. All I know is what's happening at the moment is wrong. And even, like I say, even if we fixed it tomorrow, it's still going to take a long time for this to get better. So I guess the biggest thing I'm trying to educate people on is know your rights, know the rules.
Absolutely.
Know your GP or your doctor or your psychologist. Have a good relationship with them. Do they have a firearms license? That's going to be a big indicator of whether they're going to, you know.
I'd add to that too is that not only just know your GP and have a good relationship with them, it is that if you have an indifferent relationship with them, change them. It's okay to change GPs. Get one that understands you. Find somebody that works for you.
Yeah. Right? If you don't want to go and have a dinner date with your GP and have a yarn with them, they're not really going to work for you. If you couldn't sit down and have a beer with that person and be friends with them, you probably don't want to disclose every bit of information like that to them, especially in this situation at the moment. The other thing I really want to push on people and encourage people to do is get educated around mental health. So, you know, we've got Mates in Construction. There's so many, there's Blueprint for Learning, Mental Health 101, there's Goodyear Training. Yeah. Go get them, just like we do first aid. Why do we get first aid? If you hurt yourself, Cam, I can put a Band-Aid on you and say, shit, this is more than I can handle. I need to get you to the professionals before you die. Mental health's the same. You're not there to be the psychologist. You're not there to give them the answers. You're just there to put the Band-Aid on, support that person and help them through the process of getting them the help that they need before they die. Same situation. So more people got educated around this. A lot of people in those early days of depression probably won't need to go to the GP. You could avoid the whole system process altogether just by talking to a friend, having a friend talk you through the process, take you out hunting, chat out in the hill, and get through that. This is the biggest answer for me. This is one thing that I feel is gonna change the way mental health is in the country. And this is not just for hunters and firearms. This is the whole country needs to get educated. Every industry needs some sort of mental health training for their staff. If we do that, everyone's going to support each other. Like I said, there's little acute little, you've broken up with your wife and you've got to go see a counselor because you're having a hard time. Yeah, it sucks. But you've also got a friend that could probably help you just as much. You're going to clear up the system. The system won't be so jam-packed with people with little things that don't really need to see someone. And the ones that really need it are going to get in. So all of a sudden, we're going to have a system that's not as pressed as it is right now with people trying to get in because everyone's chasing the free counselling that's available because everyone's donating everything for free counselling, the Cliff Edge service. And yet everyone wants free shit. So if you give them free counselling, everyone's going to want it whether you need it or not. But if everyone starts helping each other, we're not going to need so much. We're not going to have a wait list to get into the counselling services. So I really believe we as a community, as a human being, have the ability to help each other just with a little bit of training and just keep up to date with it every couple of 3 years, do another course. I mean, I've done many of them. And every single one I do, I take something away with me and a little bit more empathy towards other people and understand like, shit, yeah, that's why I used to get angry. That's why they're angry. They're not just a prick. They're actually having a shit time. I can see they've got a lot on their plate. You start looking at people differently without making judgment calls. And I think, like I say, if everyone went and got that little bit of education, we're going to put the country in a better place, mental health-wise. And if your mate is really having a hard time, say, put your guns at my house. I'll store your firearms. And I can take you to the GP if you want, or you can take yourself. Let's go get you the help you need. You need to get help, mate. I can't help you. When they do go there and they ask the questions, you say, oh, yeah, I've stored the guns. Already it's going to put you in a better position. You've done all the right things. And it's going to help. And I do believe in the Firearm Safety Authority, the people that I've been talking to, they are taking it case by case these days. So they are aware that it's not just one shoe fits all. So everyone's situation is different. And they've got to go through the details and, you know, look what happened because they did it wrong with Christchurch. They didn't do the job properly.
Police didn't do the job properly. Right? That's the thing. Police let us down, but it's us, it's the firearms owners that were penalised.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you were saying about getting help early, that's the problem with blokes, isn't it? We don't want to talk about it.
No.
We don't want to be embarrassed in front of our mates. We don't want to – well, if you're going to be embarrassed in front of somebody who you consider a mate, they ain't your mate.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're worried of what their judgment of you is going to be.
You're not your mate, right? So, but you know, what I found in my depression and when understanding the pathology of it, what affected me the most is that, and I learned this from the psychologist. He says, Cam, I can't help you until you get off all of these stupid drugs that they've put you on, because I'm not dealing with the real you. Mm. That's what he said to me. I mean, he's a bit of a hard man. Mm. But what I found is that if I got fit, and when I say fit, you know, it can be as little as walking 5Ks a day, but doing a reasonable, I'm not talking about taking 2 hours for a 5K stroll. I'm talking about 40 minutes for a 5K stroll, you know, when you're actually so that you get a sweat up, so that your brain gets tricked in, not into this fight flight response, but into, hang on a minute, I need to breathe in, breathe out. And that breaks the cycle of the depression by doing that. And so I know when I'm, you know, when it's been a bit, you know, rubbish weather, or it's been a bit awful, and I'm starting to feel a bit down, I know tomorrow morning I need to go for a walk. I have to go for a walk, and I have to do that again the next day and the next day. And then all of a sudden, I've got a happy disposition again. And it was simple as that for me. Yeah. Now, for other people, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Just doing those little simple things can often lead to that breakthrough that you need.
Yeah. And it's been scientifically proven, for crying out loud, that exercise and getting in nature stimulates you mentally. It's a proven fact. So why would we take that away from people?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Totally agree with you.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense. And I'm the same. You know, I've had a bit of a job change, and it was a bit of a stressful situation, and I was just going downhill, and I wasn't exercising. I was on a night shift, and I was having all my sleep patterns were up.
Yeah.
Just gotten back on the building sites, and life's great. I've started going to the gym again. I've started walking up in the hills again, just on my days off.
I'm on your face again. Yeah.
And I'm all of a sudden like, right, back on track. But you just got to get out and do those. And you know, back in the day, it was, for me, it was like, go out and have a beer, and that was not working. It's funny though, like with what happened to me, it was take your firearms because you're not fitting proper. If you look at the legislation in its form on the website, it's got, you know, to become a fit and proper firearms license holder. But then directly under it, you also need to be not drinking alcohol, do not abuse drugs. Now, at the time when I was really suicidal, I was drinking a lot of alcohol. And if anything was going to kill me, it was the fact that I was drinking alcohol. It was the bad thoughts I'd have when I was drinking. Mm. So those police came to me and said, we're going to take your firearms away because you're drinking too much alcohol and it's making you a not fit and proper person. I would have turned around and been, shit, I need to look at myself here. I am the idiot here. And I would have probably done something about my drinking earlier. But it never gets used in that format. The amount of people drinking too much alcohol and taking too many drugs, it's still classed as fit and proper. I think if they got knocked on their door and said, instead of saying you've got a mental health issue,
throw in the bag.
That you need to sort your alcohol problem out. You're constantly at the police station after fighting every weekend at the bar and rah, rah, rah. You think people would look in the mirror and go, I got to sort my life out. That it would actually guide them to do something about themselves rather than, you're having a hard time. Yeah. Take your guns off.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? You know, dealing with mental health, first of all, you have to decide you want to deal with it. So the person who's most responsible for your mental health is you. The person you see in the mirror. And if you don't like the person that you see in the mirror, that's where you start.
Yeah, yeah. And I say this to a lot of people. Obviously, people reach out to me a lot because I've been through this. You know, my life's not perfect now. I have my ups, my downs, my good days, my bad days. I just know how to manage them because I got help and because I got shared the tools and different things that work for me, and I've created my own toolbox of things that work. But I probably wouldn't if I'd never gone and got help. So I'm able to, you know, find my way through those moments. But when people come to me, it's like, I don't actually have the answers for you. But all I know is the fact that you're coming to me tells me you want to do something about it. And you're being actively, you know, you're being active in asking me for help. But you need to look at yourself and go, what do I need to do? You know, you need to make those. I can't force you to go to the gym. I can't force you to walk up Mount Iron. You've got to just go for a stroll around the block. Think it out, walk it out. And as you do that, it's going to get easier and easier. And if you're overweight and you haven't exercised for 10 years, start. Just get up in the morning and walk around the block. Walk around the block and then come back in and have your coffee. Simple things like that is just going to stimulate you and get you wanting to do more, because it does put you in a better state of mind, getting out in the hills, getting into nature, doing a little bit of exercise.
Absolutely. But, you know, I've got a good mate. He's one of my buddies that I have on the radio show each week. And he's got a saying, you know, if it's to be, it's up to thee.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's true.
If you want to be the best employee where you work, or you want to be a successful business person, no one else can do that for you. You have to do it for yourself. And mental health is exactly the same. You have to want to I don't like the word fix, because I don't consider myself to be broken. Right? I have different features, and I have to learn how to control some of those features.
Yeah.
But it's up to me. I have to want to do that, because otherwise no one can help you.
Yeah. Well, my wife was telling me for years I needed to get help. And I'm like, no, piss off, I'm going to the pub.
bless her. That's part of the problem.
Yeah. 20 years on, she's still standing by my side. So I got a lot to owe her, I tell you. She's seen the good in me right from the start, knew that it was a good person hiding behind all that shit. But it wasn't her that got me to the doctor. I didn't go to the doctor and get help. I didn't get off the piss because I'm under the thumb. I physically said, I need to get help. Yeah, okay, maybe you're right. I am going to go to the doctor. I am going to get off piss because I want to, not because you're telling me to. Because every time she'd say, you need to stop drinking, I'd be at the pub having a beer again. You're not telling me what to do. But, like you say, I had to make that decision myself. And you do need to make those decisions, because it ain't going to get better if you don't. It's only going to get worse. And I do, even with, and it's really hard for me to say, it's not hard, but it's contradicting almost. But with everything that I'm advocating around how bad things are and how shit it is about having your firearm, I still say to people, go get buggy your firearms. You know, if you're just out there hunting.
They're just things, aren't they? They're just things.
Yeah, just go and get your help. Your life is way more important than fighting over having a gun, especially if you're just someone, you know, all you do is go for the odd weekend. There's people in the cities that are CEOs that they live every day of their life ready for the raw, one week of the year. You know, if that's the only thing, but you're mentally in a bad position, are you really going to enjoy that week because you're having such a hard time? Get yourself fixed so that you can enjoy that week. You know, it was a burden in my life, and fortunately I'm turning it around into a positive thing. I find now that depression has actually made me the strongest person I am now, because I've learned to manage so many different feelings and emotions in my life, and now I've figured out how to manage them. I can put that energy into things like this and encouraging other people to hopefully get help. And, yeah, there's this burden, there's this barrier, but the way I've managed to, like I say, work through the process over 5 years without just jumping out and starting a hate the government page. I've strategically gone along and spoken to people in the back end and figured out a way how we can get this out there, that it's a positive thing, and find ways. And like I say, education's one.
Understand the pathway. There is a pathway through this.
Yeah.
You just need guidance on that pathway, but it's up to you. You have to do it.
Exactly. We had the Firearm Safety Authority come here to Wanaka, and we took them out on a hunting trip. We filmed a YouTube episode of that. But while I was there, we had a podcast just to get all the facts so that I could get that information to hunters, to firearms license holders, to farmers, whatever. While I were here, I organised through my own community, I put a letter out to every GP, psychologist, counsellor in our Wanaka region to come to a seminar that I set up with Kendra there. I also had Catherine Wright, who's a rural counsellor, who's very aware of that. She's very passionate about this same topic as me. She's a great one to bounce ideas off. And I had this seminar for health practitioners to give them some education around it. Well, we've got three practices in Wanaka, and two of those bigger practices didn't have one GP turn up. And the smallest one that's only just started with four GPs had two GPs turn up, and those two GPs walked out of there and said to me, I never realized there was a surrender option, a self-surrender option. So instantly Kendra's gone, there is a big gap between the information that's there and getting it to the GPs, to the health practitioners, So instantly she's gone home and she's working on that. So there are things that are changing in that department too, so that the information, the facts are going to the health practitioners. Because like what happened to me, he told me, oh, by law, I have to do this. No, he didn't. It was, you know, it was up to him to see, to decide whether I was fit and proper. And I was. If he'd asked me more questions like, yeah, okay, you're suicidal, but do you want to die? Of course I don't want to die. That's why I'm in this room. He would have gone, oh, you're not going to.
It's like the questions I had, you know, how do you feel when you go hunting? You know, why do you collect firearms? Why, you know, why? Because I get enjoyment from it. I find enjoyment from those things. Mm. But if you find enjoyment from those things, you're not going to use them to kill yourself, are you?
No, exactly. And like we said earlier, what the process that they drag you through and the way that it was treated back then, it was so bad it actually made me want to walk out that door and step in front of a bus. It was horrible. I felt like I'd just done something.
But at least you wouldn't have killed yourself with a firearm, though.
Hey?
at least you wouldn't have killed yourself with a firearm.
No. And I don't. Yeah, I don't like talking about means or how, what I would have, wouldn't do. But it was never in my mind have I ever thought about using a firearms. And I'm not just saying that. It's just never been in the equation for me when I've thought about it. So, yes, I've had those feelings and I've felt, you know, worthless and I've wanted to end my life. And, you know, but I know how to manage that now. And like I say, I only know how to manage that because I got the help I needed. And I can't take one pill a day.
Because you sought that help, not anybody else. You did. You decided, I need to sort this out.
Yeah. And if everyone can get a bit more vocal amongst their friends and amongst their peers, farmers, and, you know, with your loved ones, your neighbouring farm, you know, and support each other through those times rather than having people go through this in an isolated situation, because it's just carrying on the stigma. Open up the conversation. Yeah, shit, life's bad. I'm going to surrender my own firearms licence just so that I can still do my job but get the help I need, and in 6-12 months' time I'm going to get it back. Get my life on track. It is, you are the number one priority, staying fit and healthy. Yes, there's a barrier, Cam, but I do believe with the noise we're making now, and it's positive noise with the change of legislation that's happening with the Firearms Act, the meeting I had with Nicole McKee was very positive. They're very aware of this situation. It's a delicate one. And by no means am I advocating that every single firearms license holder should own a firearms regardless of their mental state. Absolutely not. If you're not well, get rid of it. And there's people that just shouldn't have a firearms. I understand that.
Split the guns with your mate, get your help, get yourself sorted, then you can take your guns back. It's not a problem.
We certainly don't want to live a life of no legislation, no rules. Otherwise, we're just going to end up like America, which we can see what's going on over there. It's not a healthy place to be either. You know, you got to have rules. You got to have regulations. It'd be like the road. If we didn't have any drink driving rules, any speeding challenges, you know, I don't think the roads would be a very good place to be either. Yeah. So you got to have these things. I just think we've got to navigate our way through this delicate situation. And I honestly believe being more vocal about your own health, your own vulnerabilities, getting your own education, knowing the legislation, not listening to everything you see on Facebook and every little feed that comes through your Facebook feed, because half of it's bullshit. Or it's if I put my story up now and said it happened last week, it's not right. It's not right. What happened to me is definitely not happening now. There are systems and processes now, which there wasn't then. It was just police were figuring it out as they went because they got thrown this new rule. So, yeah, I do believe, and I'm pretty passionate that things are getting better. It's going to be a really slow road. I'm very curious to see what Minister McKee comes out with the new rewrite, and I'm really looking forward to digging my teeth into that. And I really hope that everyone stands up and has their own say when that opportunity arises. We really need people to.
They've absolutely got to have a say.
We've been too quiet about mental health because we're embarrassed about it. Now's the time to put that behind you and stand tall and go, yeah, I've had depression. This is crap. That's what happened to me. This is stopping me from getting help. Or if you could see the emails and messages that I get now, there's hardly a person in this country that hasn't got some sort of mental health issue or crisis going on. It's like to punish everyone. It's just crazy. And like I say, I'm not for or against the government. All I'm saying is this is not right at the moment. the people I've been working with in the authority, Firearm Safety Authority at the moment, they are working, they are ringing me, asking me questions. How can we do this better?
And
it's a positive thing. And they are, and they do not want to take everyone's firearms like everyone thinks, but they do got to have rules. And, you know, they're in the process of trying to figure out ways to get younger people into it, as is the NZDA. We need to get, they want to get more, it's like over 50s, I think, is the majority of firearms license holders. We need to get younger ones through, but they also know with what they're doing now with all this stuff is making it harder.
Exactly. So, same with the clubs situation. You know, the key to getting young people involved in shooting sports is easy access in a controlled environment to those firearms, and clubs are the perfect position for that. But the police have overregulated the clubs, and a lot of clubs are facing closing down.
Yeah.
We're running up a bit against time, though. How can people get hold of you, Glenn? How can they find out about Mental Hunts?
Well, we've just recently launched our website, mentalhunts.co.nz. That's got a little tab at the end of Contact Us if you wanted to get hold of me via the email there.
Yep.
Also, Instagram is our main port of where we really started, I suppose. So a lot of our information, a lot of topics we have go through there. We've also got a YouTube channel, which is not about trying to take over the world and be the next big thing. It's about trying to get information out to people about mental health. We've got our next episode, we've got a fella coming on with a real life story, which is going to be quite amazing for people to hear. We've had the Firearm Safety Authority on that YouTube channel. So we've got all the information as it is right now, which will probably change, but at the moment we'll cross that bridge then. And just trying to get that information out to people. It's about trying to create a following so that we can get information to people. It's not about trying to be the next influence. That's not what we're about.
Influencing individuals to take agency and solve their own problems.
That's it, yeah, and open up these conversations. You know, everyone's out raising money to print a brochure. I don't believe that that's going to help the country. I think opening up the dialogue, changing the narrative, and actually sharing your vulnerabilities is going to help the country's mental health crisis more than a brochure or a free counselling session. And to do that, to get educated and to talk to your mates, it costs no one nothing.
Yeah.
Free. Yeah.
All right, Glenn, thank you very much for coming on The Crunch. And that information is vital out there for listeners. Search on Instagram or YouTube, even on Facebook, Mental Hunts, or go to mentalhunts.co.nz. And thank you for coming on the show, Glenn.
Yeah, thanks, Cam. Really appreciate you having me on.
I felt talking about this topic with Glenn was very important. It's one area that we didn't have time for last week when I was talking with Hugh Devereaux Mack. As blokes, we need to talk about this, and being no dicks about it is a non-starter. It's important. Talk to your mates. Tell me what you think. Email inbox@realitycheck.radio or text to 2057.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.